few months ago, we found a photograph that someone took at exactly the moment he was in Rio de Janeiro, and it was looking at that gigantic Christ statue. And the photo was taken at the exact moment that lightning struck the head of Christ. And it was a very dramatic photo. And I couldn't resist using that as the banner for our next retreat, which I think is now online, yes? And the title we gave it is Prepare for the Striking Power of God, because that is the next phase of our spiritual development. And in line with that, I was also doing more research on the Vajra Chedika Sutra, which we've been calling the Diamond Cutting Sutra. But I found a new translation of it. Actually, it's not new, but it was new to me, from the Chinese translation of the Sanskrit that was more accurate than the English that came from the Sanskrit. In any case, the word Vajra, we know, means not only diamond, but it also means lightning. And so the Vajra Chedika Sutra, really, its title should be the Lightning Strike Sutra. So I thought it was an interesting synchronicity that we are studying the lightning strike at the same time that we have put that photo on our website, and that is the topic as we go forward with the logical unfoldment of the information that we have developed in the last retreat, which I think brings itself to its own paradoxical sublation in this Lightning Strike Sutra. So I think we've arrived at the sixth section, and so I'll start reading it and then give some comments as we go. So it continues from obviously the section before that, which ends, this having been said, the Buddha told the Venerable Subhuti, since the possession of attributes is an illusion and no possession of attributes is no illusion, by means of attributes that are no attributes, the Tathagata can be seen. Okay, so if you think you're seeing someone when you're looking at their body, then you don't understand who is the nature of the being you're relating to, because the being is a mind, a consciousness, a heart, a capacity to understand, a capacity to interpret, and to get to the core of what is real. But that capacity, that intelligence, is not visible and has nothing to do with the bodily vehicle. And so the real self, the Buddha nature, has no attributes, or its attributes are no attributes, because they're neither in the quantum wave function nor the qualium. They are in a dimension beyond that's responsible for the collapse and decollapse of that function. Okay, so now, this having been said, the sixth section begins, the Venerable Subhuti asked the Buddha, Bhagavan, will there be any beings in the future, in the final epoch, in the final period, in the final 500 years of the Dharma-ending age, who will give birth to a perception of the truth of the words of a sutra such as that which is spoken here? All right? So that's the question. At the end of time, will there be anyone left with the capacity to think and to understand a message as subtle and paradoxical as this one. And the point being that the level of intelligence, the level of clarity, the level of attunement to the highest vibrational frequencies gets weaker and weaker through time and through the entropic process that affects the quantum wave functions. And so the question is a very astute one, because if you still had people who could understand that, would the world have fallen to the level that it is at right now, at the end of that 500-year final period that we are now in? But the Buddha says, Subhuti, do not ask a question like, will there be any beings in the final epic who give birth to a perception of the truth of the words of a sutra such as that spoken here? Surely in the future there will be fearless bodhisattvas who are capable, virtuous, and wise, who give birth to a perception of the truth of the words of a sutra such as that spoken here. Indeed, Subhuti, such fearless bodhisattvas will have honored not just one Buddha, and they will have planted auspicious roots before not just one, but such fearless bodhisattvas will have honored countless hundreds and thousands of Buddhas, and they will have planted auspicious roots before countless hundreds and thousands of Buddhas. In the words of a sutra such as that spoken here, they are sure to gain perfect clarity of mind. Interesting, the Sanskrit is ekka citta, so it's not just perfect clarity of mind, but it's the realization of the one mind, because that alone is perfect clarity. The Tathagata knows them, Subhuti. This is very interesting. The Tathagata knows them, the ones in the future, by means of his Buddha knowledge. And the Tathagata sees them by means of his Buddha vision. The Tathagata is aware of them, for they all produce and receive a measureless, infinite body of merit. Okay, so are you aware that the Tathagata is viewing you, is seeing you now? The Buddha mind, the intelligence, and Buddha here is an equivalent of Shiva. The mind, the one self, is gazing upon you. And why? Because you are those who have honored all of the Buddhas of the past. Because the oldest souls at the end of time are the ones who will awaken and return to their original nature by honoring the source of all Buddhas, the absolute intelligence. And by honoring that absolute intelligence, by idealizing that intelligence and making it your ideal, your one thought, your one intention, your one yearning, your one understanding of who you are, that turns you into a bodhisattva who is destined to become a Buddha at the end of the age. So this is very interesting because of what it is that is required to attain the bodhisattva stature or status. And that's in the next paragraph. And how so? Because, Subhuti, these fearless bodhisattvas do not create the perception of a self. In other words, an ego. That nor do they create the perception of a being, a life, or a soul. Nor do these fearless bodhisattvas create the perception of a dharma, much less the perception of no dharma. Subhuti, they do not create a perception, nor no perception. So this is the ideal that must be attained, the recognition that all that is objectively perceived is a dream, an illusion, a momentary and impermanent temporal series of forms that are in a flux, and they have various shelf lives, but most are very quickly appearing and disappearing. And as we get to the end of the cycle, those appearances and disappearances become more sudden and even more shocking. People die suddenly. People leave suddenly. Extreme things happen. Things disappear. Money becomes worthless. Everything you thought was reality and normality is gone, up in smoke. And so the bodhisattva is one who was never trapped in believing in any of that, and therefore not affected when it disappears. And this is the bodhisattva's victory over illusion. The bodhisattva is the one who knows that they do not exist. They are not real as a being in a world. They do not identify with a body or with an ego or even with a soul or with a life, because they recognize that there is only awareness, and only awareness remains, abides beyond time and space, and is deathless. But it's deathless because it's never born. It never comes into the world. There may be an illusion of identification with the body, but that identification is false. The consciousness is the witness of the character that it has identified with, but is not that character. And so it is that realization which brings salvation from the fear of disappearing in death and from all of the suffering that happens to those beings who do identify as a body, and all of their clinging and weakness and feeling of neediness and helplessness and desire and demand and guilt and shame and the projection and demonization of others and the blaming of others and oneself for one's lack of happiness. All of that is shed by the bodhisattva. And so if we think about all of the characters we have just been analyzing in the Ramayana, the most important character who becomes the bodhisattva very clearly is the character that has least dramatic volatility. The most important character in the Ramayana is Lakshman, because Lakshman signifies the ideal of Rama. That ideal is taken in mimetically, but also intellectually, so that that ideal becomes activated, mobilized, and it is that power then that is able to make one who has been identified as a human by taking that in, becomes divinized. And that is the secret of transformation. Interestingly, during the war with Ravana in the Ramayana, the only one who gets wounded is Lakshman. And they think he's going to die from his wound, but a shaman comes and tells Hanuman there's one herb in India that will save his life. It's growing on a certain mountaintop. Bring that herb and we can save him. And Hanuman says, Haji, and leaps across and finds the mountain full of herbs, but he can't figure out which is the right herb. So he just rips off the whole top of the mountain and brings it back to Lanka and says to the shaman, here, find the herb on this. And he finds it and they give it to him and he survives. So Lakshman is the one who makes a blood sacrifice. The sacrifice of the ego. The sacrifice of that belief in a life. The sacrifice that is ego death must be gone through by that one, because that one is the carrier of the faithfulness that Sita did not have. And it is that capacity to bring the ideal into the real, to transform, to create an alchemical transmutation of ideal into real, that is the power and the magic that brings about our divinization. So, why not, Subhuti, if these fearless bodhisattvas created the perception of a dharma, they would be attached to a self or a life or a being or a soul. And if they created the perception of no dharma, they would likewise be attached. And why not? Because surely, Subhuti, fearless bodhisattvas do not cling to a dharma, much less to no dharma. This is the meaning behind the Tathagata saying, a dharma teaching is like a raft. If you should let go of dharmas, how much more so of no dharmas? And so this is the question of the bodhisattva, because it's based on the ideal of recognizing the truth of what Buddha is teaching. But that truth is taken in symbolic terms, and the symbolic must be turned into the real. So the ideal itself must be transmuted. The ideal is dharma, but it can't simply be turned into no dharma, which would be a kind of a nihilistic, opposite, contradictory, meaninglessness approach. No, it's not about meaninglessness, it's meaning moreness. The opposite of the definite is the infinite. And so it is that total indeterminacy, that total lack of entering into any belief, any concept, any image, any narrative whatsoever, of keeping the mind absolutely beyond all conceptual systems of belief, all symbolic forms, all maps of reality, all of that. You must learn them only in order to forget them. If you don't learn them, if you don't study the sutra, you won't be able to get it symbolically. But once you have studied it, you must forget it. Otherwise, you would become a parrot of the words, but you would not have realized their meaning. But the meaning of the words is beyond language, beyond concept. It's not another word. It's not a definition. It has to be a referent to that which can never be captured in language because of its infinite nature, the infinite intelligence of the Buddha mind. It's that which you are, It's that infinite intelligence which never appears in the world, but is the cause of the world's appearance. Because the Buddha nature, the mind of God, is the dreamer of this dream. And that is who you are. If you realize that, then the new world will be dreamed through your awakening. And your awakening will end the dream that is now underway and create the possibility of the impossible. Of a world of evil and chaos and destruction and ruin to become a world of heavenly delight. And the only way it can be achieved is if you find that level of delight, of joy, of mahasukha, of bliss, in your heart now, and live in that state. In that state of unconditional, loving delight. That is our real nature. And that brings the salvation of all. May you be so filled with peace that the luminous clarity of mind is fully unveiled. And the delight that peace brings, along with that sattvic stream of information and vibrational frequency of joy and divine love and unconditional acceptance because of the vision of the perfection of all that is, brings the opening of the heart to the Absolute. And may you be saturated with the peace of the Absolute that brings such deep understanding that the mind lets go of all images and all concepts and all identities and all beliefs in a world and all impressions and all intentions and all desires and fears, and becomes absolutely clear and clean and a space of sacred presence in which the absolute nature can eternally abide. And may you know the total and absolute shanti of being struck by the lightning bolt of God's presence in your head and heart and soul, and filling your life that is no life and soul that is no soul with the infinite absolute nature that is inconceivably beautiful and impossible to define. And may you be blessed with the power to transmit that divine lightning to all whom you meet. Namaste.